All right, this is episode 11. We're focusing on Halloween. Alex is not here, so I am the director and I'm taking over. You can contact us on the email, justinfilespodcast@gmail.com, the Twitter, justincast. I talk to the people on Twitter all the time, so if you want to talk to us, please contact me because it's fun. We have a website, justinfilespodcast.com, YouTube, RSS feed, and iTunes, and I don't know much about that, so I'm skipping over it. So to introduce everybody, Justin, say hi.
Hi.
Chris.
Hello, everyone.
And our guest for today from Australia, and it's way too early in the morning for him, Jordan.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and coffee good.
Yeah. So as for the news today, we don't really have much except for it's Halloween, and yeah, that's important. Jim just had a birthday. I don't know how old he is, like 45 or something. I don't know. And I think Jordan had a birthday this month, too. So happy birthday. And now tell us what your favorite three books are and your favorite character.
Okay, so favorite three books, I'd have to say Skin Game, Small Favor, White Knight. Favorite character has to be Harry's id.
Is that why Skin Game is your favorite?
Yeah, Skin Game or Small Favor would probably have to be my favorite.
Harry's id disappeared for a while. That was sad.
Okay. Mm.
So how old are you now? You're like 21?
19.
Oh, never mind. I'm young.
Yeah, I'm pretty young compared to everyone here, I think. Oh, you old people.
Well, just you and Alex, you know, so.
Wow. So, well, how old is Harry? This is a fun topic because nothing is really explicitly stated, and I did some research on it. There's also a timeline that Priscilla did on the jimbutcher.com, and I was studying through that this morning. I found some fun things. So I think that Harry is born in, like, 1975 or 74, depending, and that Stormfront takes place in 2000. So 15 books later, it kind of has caught up to where we are in time now.
'75, so that would make him, what, 40? If the timeline has reached our year?
I mean, he should be around that, but I think based on the numbers that I found this morning, he should be 38 in Skin Game, as well as in Peace Talks. It's only 3 months after, so...
Harry always seems like, I don't know, he always talks like he's 20 years old, but yeah, he's got to be something like 30, late 30s, early 40s, because with the way he talks about his relationship with Molly, it's like he always talks about the age gap between them, but as Bob says, or whoever says that, it's, you know, oh, he's it actually, figuratively shrinking all the time, so I think he'd be about 40 maybe.
Yeah, he's near 40, but hasn't quite reached it. In the short story, It's My Birthday Too, I think Thomas turned 40, and Harry should have been about 33, based on my math.
Yeah, and we know that he's not 40 yet, because Asher says as much when they're having their stuff. Like, Christ, you're not even 40 yet, are you, Dresden? If
That's
I remember
Lucio.
Right. No, no, because Lucio would know how old he is, but yeah, I'm pretty sure
Lucio,
it was Spring Game and Asher.
Said at the end of Turncoat, you're not even 40.
Right, but
yeah.
Sure Asher brings it back up, too, so.
I thought Asher just talks about how he's been burned in the past, because I think I seem to remember that a lot. I don't know, all the conversations with Asher are sort of bamboozled by boobs on Harry's part.
Ooh, I like that phrase, bamboozled by boobs. Right, so I find it funny that Thomas is pretty much exactly 7 years older than Harry, but what else can you expect from Jim, especially since there are seven Carpenter children, like, kind of forcing it into the number seven. And what month do you think changes took place in? Heck, notice.
Oh, dear God.
It would have been early fall, late summer, because doesn't Changes in Ghost Story, they're just a few months apart, or are they like 6 months apart? because I know it's the same year.
So this is on the timeline that Priscilla made up. She's put changes in October, but Ghost Story is pretty definitively starting at May 9th, which is 6 months after he died. So that would actually put changes in December. And then someone on the subreddit, I don't remember who, pointed out that that lines up very nicely with December 12, 2012, and the ending of the Mayan calendar in which he destroyed all of the Red Court.
Interesting. Is that when changes came out? Has it been that long already? I guess it would have been, huh? Because if he's pushing out a book a year about, so... Yeah, December 21st, 2012 would have been the Mayan apocalypse, right? That's pretty crazy. I like it.
Yeah. I was really lucky. I started when Ghost Story came out.
Yeah, but now I hope that Priscilla doesn't, like, murder me.
It's already a hit on director Alex. If anyone's interested, I work for Chi, so just swing me a message.
Okay, so what's the timeline? You're saying 75 was when he was born, probably?
Right around. He's about 25 in Stormfront, and that took place in March. So he's like 25, this is his previous birthday, and Full Moon, which takes place in October, he should be just about turning 26.
Okay, so that would put him around 37 or 38, right?
Yeah, he should be 38 in Skin Game. But Changes took place or was published in 2010, so he went ahead.
Well, and that I think that's part of why he's been fuzzy on the timeline. If you think about it, though, ultimately it doesn't matter because the books are written from Dresden's timeline. So Dresden has already done all of these things. So if he is trying to keep them contemporary, then if we're growing with the books, if it is in real time, then we found out where he's going to break Law 7. But, you know, like the books, it's not like he's stopping to write them along the way. Supposedly they're retrospective, was my impression. So he's writing them, you know, after everything's said and done.
Slightly off topic, aren't Deadbeat and Proven Guilty the wrong way around in the timeline? I seem to have read that somewhere before.
He intended them to be in a different order, but I don't know. I think he actually made that just fit. He was going to write Proven Guilty first, if I remember right, and then the publisher came and said that, you know, hey, we want to do a hardcover and we want to give a new starting point for readers and things like that, and he decided that it was going to move Deadbeat forward. Same thing kind of with Changes. Like, Changes was always meant to be book 10, but it just didn't fit right where it was, so that's why he pushed it and kind of rearranged what he had.
Another tidbit about Deadbeat is, word of Jim is that Ramirez is 20 in Deadbeat, and therefore Molly being about 17 in Proven Guilty, put them about 3 years different, although in White Knight, Molly ages like 2 years, even though she shouldn't have. So they're like 2 to 3 years apart.
And, yep, I'm cool with the Molly Ramirez ship if that ever happens, especially because it would make Alex upset because that would mean Karen and Dresden. Just saying. So.
Yep.
I mean, like, if we're going on who's going to get shipped with Dresden, like, based off of how many sex dreams Dresden's had about them, I think in Murphy's winning right now. Or is that technically Lashiel because that was Lash in that one?
I hate that scene. Let's move on. It's great until the end anyway, so.
All right, so Deadbeat is his birthday. He should be turning 31. And then Cold Days is his birthday. Also, he should be turning 37, just so anybody is curious if I did the math correctly.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, honestly, 37 is right where I would have guessed it anyway, because he's near enough to 40 that it's on the radar, but he's far enough from it that, you know, he gets crap about it. And then the books are a little wonky on the timeline because instead of being, you know, 6 to 9 months to a year, they're now like 3 to 6 months, it seems like, and he sort of accelerated the timeline a little bit. Or maybe there's just more downtime. No, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, between Ghost Story and Skin Game, and even, sorry, not Ghost Story, but between Cold Days and Skin Game, it seemed like they were pretty quick. And then, you know, Ghost Story was definitely within the same calendar year as Changes, so. Or the same 365 days, because December to May, you know, so.
Yeah. It seems like in the beginning it's like 6 months between, a year between, 8 months. 8 months comes up a lot in between, and then there's like 18 months from Death Mass to Blood Rites, and then a year from Proven Guilty to White Knight, and then about 18 months after, what is it, White Knight is Small Favor. This is kind of long, but then like 8 months later is Turncoat, and then at least 18 months again between Turncoat and Changes. And then it's 6 months from Changes to Ghost Story, and then 11 weeks between Ghost Story to Cold Days, and then 16 months from Cold Days to Skin Game. So like they're becoming very random in how long things are going. And then there's only going to be months from Skin Game to Peace Talks.
Right. Well, 11 weeks isn't enough for it to be 6 months between... Did I miss that? Yeah. Between Ghost Story and Cold Days, or...
So Ghost Story is in May, and then like 11 weeks later, it's his birthday. So it's in Halloween. It's today.
Yeah, but that's 11 weeks is less than 4 months, right?
It's a little bit over 2 months.
Well, it's nearly. So it's 4 weeks in a month, right? I can't believe we're having this argument. But so I'm just saying, like, it doesn't seem to fit because it's very definitely Cold Days takes place on his birthday. That kind of has to be. Maybe it's because it starts 11 weeks later and his recovery takes X number of weeks. Because he's, you know, in Cold Days, he starts out with Mab trying to murder him for 77 days, right? So that makes more sense. Or is it even that many? But, yeah.
Well, 77 days is 11 weeks.
Yes.
Touche, but okay. So it can't take place 11 weeks later.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, just as far as the calendar and the math, like, that doesn't jive, the 11 weeks from May to his birthday.
Right.
Yeah. I guess he was unconscious until the first time Mab tried to kill him, and then that's when the 11 weeks started counting.
Maybe, yeah. So there's a little bit of a gap, but that's fine. I was just like, wait a minute, that's not... Because there's 5 months between May and his birthday, yeah. Basically. So... Okay. So yep. It seems like the consensus is roughly right around 37, then.
It should be his 37th birthday. That is Cold Days. And so now, 16 months later, he's 38 in the February timeline of Skin Game. I just messed up my math with the Ghost Story to Skin or Cold Days. So now that we have that out of the way, should we talk about the Starborn stuff? The fact that like he is a Starborn because he was born on this day, sort of. Elaine's born on the same day. Do we have any more speculation as to what that means?
I know that it's pretty much assumed that he can affect outsiders in some way, even though he doesn't seem to, like, throw down magically with them very often. I mean, considering Shark Boy, you know, that was almost all a mental battle as much as anything. So we know that's part of it because it takes pretty much somebody of High Council level talent to be able to... you know, fight them, because you see stuff like that with the Battle of Sicily, right? That's what happens right before Deadbeat, where Ramirez and everybody get their asses kicked. So so we know that, and then, you know, it seems like there was some argument / speculation that just because you were born on the day doesn't necessarily mean that you got the powers, and that was part of why, like, Elaine and Harry are still sort of different, but I'm not sure if I buy that or if that's just a difference in application, because you see that between Elaine and Harry a lot. Like, she may not have as much raw power, but she's got way more finesse, and so she can definitely keep up with him, but she just doesn't apply her talent in the same way, being more content to hide and stay out of the council limelight, whereas Harry sort of does everything he can to piss them off, you know, so... I don't know. Yeah, I think that's all I know about the Starborn stuff.
Well, it seems like maybe it has to do that you're born on the right time with the talent for magic anyway would make you a Starborn, unless there's just a lot of stuff that we don't know yet, which is very, very possible. And Chris and Jordan, you have any thoughts?
I think I saw a theory on Reddit like a couple of months ago while I was meant to be listening to a lecture at uni. It was about Harry, one of the powers of a Starborn being related to naming, because we see Harry doing an awful lot of like naming things, saying this and that about stuff, defining things over the course of the series. And I think they also used the example of when he calls calls Mr. Sunshine Yuri, and how that scared him so much. But that was also sort of explained by Uriel as like, hey, you mortals throw around names like hand grenades. But yeah, that's sort of one of the theories that I've adopted, just because of how much he does it over the course of the series.
Yeah, I do remember hearing that theory, but I honestly think it just boils down to him being a wizard, because I think that was just... I think he even mentions that Ebenezer had him learn the names for things, and that's why he knows animal names. Like, when he goes to talk to Titania, I think... Was that Cold Days when he does that? But anyway, when he talks to her for the first time, so, you know, sure, he does the things with the Octocons and the Chlorophened and several other things, but I always chalked it up to him being a wizard, and that names and knowledge is power, not necessarily that he had power because, like, he had some power to name things. He was just kind of taking it upon himself to do that.
Thinking on that whole mental battle with Sharkboy, I wonder if maybe being a Starborn might also afford him some kind of resistance to the Nemesis itself. Because, I mean, there's obviously been times in the series where he could have, you know, caught it, but didn't. He's actively working against this thing that can corrupt people and they don't even know it. But, you know, he's never come down with anything like that.
That we know of.
Okay, Morgan, chill out.
New theory, Harry's id is actually the Nemesis inside him.
Ooh, I like it. So, yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to, I mean, you're right, Chris, in the sense we don't know how Nemesis is transferred, so that's one of the missing jigsaw puzzle pieces, but Morgan and even Ebenezer bring up the fact that, like, he's got more, or I think even Rashid in Turncoat brings up the fact that it's like, you got way more power than you should, you're harnessing an army of fairies, you're doing all these things, you're near shit that goes wrong all the time, and then you're just telling us that you're not in on it, and we're supposed to believe you, you know, when they have their little showdown at the What's Up Doc. And, you know, I think that's a really good point that, you know, he seems to be immune to it somehow, and everybody else doesn't think that he is, which is why they think that he's a bad guy.
Don't forget, like, adding onto that list of shit that Harry's done, he also claimed Demon Reaches a Sanctum, unknowingly making himself the Warden, which is something which freaked the hell out of Rashid and Ebenezer.
Right, yeah, he's got way more power than a lot of people, way quicker than he should have. You know, he's probably amassed, you know, connections and power in, you know, basically 15 years that some of the High Council guys didn't get in 100 years. And I think that's part of what freaks him out. And the fact that he does look like a loose cannon even to his allies. They just think that he's their loose cannon instead of, you know, the bad guy's loose cannon.
Also, don't forget with Harry, when you were talking before about, like, his power level, like, saying he needs to be, like, this sort of, like, top High Council level, he has said multiple times in the past that he's in the top 20 or 30, and you'd think that collective distance between like him and the senior council is like always shrinking, considering how much power he's constantly amassing for himself. Because we saw him get like a massive buff in changes. Like he was absolutely like melting faces, taking names and shit. Cold Days, same sort of thing. Like I like how the winter magic is sort of influencing his own. Skin Game, maybe not so much, but at the same time, it's like he has so many options now in his magic. He's got the Winter Mantle, he's also got Soulfire, and he's just got his basic, like, high level of evocation as well.
And now both he and his apprentice are tied to the Winter Court. And that's just gonna, like, all of the scary shit that he's done, everything that he's accumulated, and all of the distrust that he's gotten for good reason is now getting amplified by the fact that he's a Winter Knight and not in completely humanly sober all the time. I'm so excited for Peace Talks and everything's going to implode.
Oh, and don't forget, he can also draw. He still hasn't drawn upon the well, the power of the well at Demon Reach, even though he probably really shouldn't. He also has that as a last resort, and the Dark Hallow as well.
Yeah.
Right. I always took it that the main difference between him and the council was experience, not necessarily even power, because, I mean, he even talks about that when Lucio and Morgan and them show up in Deadbeat, that, you know, Lucio does his style of evocation, but instead of being about the size of a fist, hers is about the size of, like, a laser, and so her power is much more focused and refined and things like that, and that's always been the main difference between Harry and everybody else. Like, he's a brawler. He can definitely throw raw power around, but he doesn't have the finesse and he doesn't have the experience to wield it dangerously, like truly dangerously, you know? So, yeah, definitely, you know, 20 or 30, but give him a couple more years and you'll see the difference. So.
Yeah, and actually, Chris, what you brought up with possibly being able to be resistant to Nemesis kind of tied into something I thought of, but is Starborn the reason that Harry can shrug off the fairy glamour and all the mind things that the vampires try to do to him as easy? Because it seems like he's been able to do that since, like, book one.
I honestly think that has more to do with him just being, you know, set in his ways and stubborn. Like, you don't get to exercise that against me more so than the Starborn thing.
It also could be because of how many times he's been exposed to it, he could have just made up resistances over time, which could just pretty much contribute to why he can pretty much shrug things off now in the terms of mental whammy.
Interesting point. I know that I picked it out as one of his traits early on because I actually built a Dresden-style RPG character for a different game, yeah, because I'm a nerd. But thinking about it, like, just go back as far as, like, De Morn and everything like that, and De Morn was trying to enthrall both of them, and even though he thought he had Elaine completely under control, she still managed to fight it a little bit. So, you know, at first I think I was in Chris's camp where I was like, Dresden's just a stubborn asshole, and that's why he, you know, he's just resistant to everything. But thinking about it more, maybe, you know, Elaine has a very similar propensity, you know, for that sort of thing, so maybe it does relate to being a Starborn somehow.
Interesting. I hope we find out more about all of this stuff soon, very soon. So changing subjects, moving on to, like, dark magic things, all the spooky, scary things of Halloween. Why didn't we get any spooky, scary skeletons? Because we should have.
I think potentially one of the reasons why we didn't get spooky, scary skeletons was because it's just not efficient in terms of creating, like, a zombie. Because when you create a zombie, the best thing to do is you coat it in flesh, and then you have, well, one layer of resistance against attacks. I'm not sure if as just a skeleton held together by magic, you'd have the same level of strength, because, you know, muscles are what they allow you to grip and whatnot. And maybe just because it just doesn't seem to be efficient in terms of, like, creating, like, an efficient zombie servitor. Like, it's easier just to clothe it in some ectoplasm and hope for the best rather than just send it out as bones.
Yeah, I think Jordan's on the nose. I mean, knowing the way Jim writes, it's probably completely a practical thing, and it's not something we would otherwise think about. I mean, on the one hand, necromantic energy is tied to mass, and that's why raising Sue was such a big deal, because the older the bones and the more mass that you can bring, the more negative necromantic energy, the safer you are, the more damage, etc. So that was part of doing Sue, was age, first of all, because it's like the oldest corpse in the down, and just sheer size. So it's probably something practical like, well, what's going to bind the bones together, and what's going to make it work? So the flesh does that, and then, you know, just having more flesh adds more mass to the corpse. Besides, ghouls are plenty scary. That's all we need.
This isn't Skeldor very pleasant, sadly.
It'd just be, fun to see a bunch of skeletons rattling around, kind of disappointed. But, yeah, it's good points that mechanics are basically tied to the mechanics and physics of everything that they're doing. So, more on the dark magic, what exactly do you think happens to these people when they do bad things to other people? Like, what is actually happening in Molly's mind when she does something bad to her friend and has to deal with the impulse to do it?
I've always likened it to the heroin analogy which Harry gave. It's like, oh, heroin feels good too. And every time he's talked about it, he's always talked about it in this way, that's sort of given it sort of this illicit drug quality. It's like, you do it once and it affects you, and then it becomes easy to do it the next time, and then the next time, and eventually you don't even recognize yourself at the end of it. So that's always been sort of how I've imagined what how black magic affects people.
Maybe I should explain why I was coming at this in that way. As I finally was able to read the Aronauts Windlass book, and I'm going to not spoil anything, but there's at one point they're describing why the magic users basically have these inabilities to do simple things, is describing that there's holes in their minds. And they get kind of trapped in them sometimes when they're falling unless they have something to anchor them to reality again. I was just wondering, is that what Jim is doing with the dark magic? It creates a hole that's like a black hole that's drawing them in towards the evil things? Because it seems like much more of a force than just other magic, the way it acts on them when they do dark things.
I'm glad you used the word force, because I was going to liken it to the Sith myself, but I personally think that it's power, and, you know, the idea that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and just the sense that once you've hit the easy button, like, it's a common theme in dark magic anyway, is that dark magic is usually used for power's sake and just because they can. I mean, you see this in Buffy with Willow when she goes dark and she just uses magic for everything. You need to open a can of soda? There's a spell for that. You need to light a candle? There's a spell for that. You need to kill somebody? You know, don't use a gun or a sword or some other method. There's a spell for that. And so, like, it becomes easy in the sense that, you know, the more you do it, the more that's your first recourse and your first reaction. You're angry, so instead of swallowing your anger and dealing with it like a rational person, there's a spell for that. You just make them not alive anymore. You know, it's just the easy path, the dark side. That's what most fantasy sci-fi fantasy, the same thing. They just go down those routes and everything is, you know, easy and awesome, and we've got cookies, and who doesn't want to be a bad guy and just barbecue everything?
Just make them not alive, Justin 2015. Can we get that on a shirt, please?
Yes, I don't want him to be dead. I just don't want him to be alive anymore.
So you're likening it to just the way that power corrupts people, rather than something like the magic is actually acting on them and changing them. I mean, even though it's what Harry says that they're doing, but it seems like magic is changing people all the time in this, and so it's like actually the force that is doing the actions, and they're just like this pitiful husk that's left over. And like magic is changing people for the good things, and like also just like healing them, but it's just the way that it seems almost that the magic is the one that's doing the bad things, and they need to stop that. I don't know. It's fun to think about. If you want to know your guys' thoughts.
But, like, on the flip side, actually, if we go talking about actual magic, like the magic Harry uses, you could probably make an argument that that changes people, too, because we saw in Skin Game when Michael was talking to Harry about his arrogance that he, because of what he can do, he holds himself to such a high standard compared to everyone else and believes he has to act in the best way possible for everyone. You could say that maybe that's the magic changing him. It's like, they're, well, it's easy just to call it magic or white magic. It just, it makes you hold yourself to a higher standard. But it's just like black magic can affect you in different ways. Like, the council are like 90% assholes. Is it possible that they're 90% assholes because that because of what they can do, that they have to hold themselves to a higher, different standard, and that they see themselves as being better than mortals, because a lot of them do? And is it possible that maybe they think they're a lot better than everyone else because of what they can do? And maybe that's what magic, normal magic does to you. It just changes you in that way. And black magic is just a different effect of that.
So, kind of like maybe the way that Mab described what Uriel Soulfire can do, if it makes you more of what you are, maybe? Like, it's like you make a decision and then it just amplifies it. And eventually when you realize that you can do so much more than the people, and kind of amplifies the arrogance?
Maybe. I don't know, I just thought about that on the spot.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty good idea. I think the main wrench in, you know, my theory so far and what kind of lends itself to what Alex is coming at it with is, in Proven Guilty at the beginning, you have that other teenager, that other warlock that they execute, you know, where Harry's like, he's just a kid, he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's very clearly portrayed in a feral sort of out of his mind type of way, where maybe you do go down the path so far that you just stop being yourself, and like Alex said, you become a husk of a person, basically, where something's changed, but we haven't seen a lot of people that far gone. And, you know, talk about people who've had another way of dealing with it. You've got Cowl and Kumori, which very clearly are necromancers, but she even tries to use her power for good. I don't know that it, just using black magic probably isn't enough to just drive you crazy, but that's certainly one of the paths that it can lead you down.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that sort of lends itself to the, the drug analogy, because, like, in drug counseling and alcohol counseling and stuff, that one of the main things that they try to hit on is that it affects the way you think on a fundamental level. Like, a person who's sober doesn't fully regain their mental capacity for 1 to 3 years after going down that hole. So that whole feral, you know, black magic turns you sort of into a, you know, a, just a wild person. I think, you know, is, I don't know where I was going with that point. just that my view on it is the drug analogy. I think that's, you know, an apt one.
Interesting. I didn't know anything about the 1 to 3 years to recover. That's intense. I mean, actually, it does seem very analogous to what Molly has to go through. It seems to be until about Turncoat, even though then she still gets into Lucio's mind, it's like she's getting better, and it takes 2 or 3 years for then, and then she's still kind of dead it again and it's like recovering again. It's just, I don't know. It seems to have a fitting timeline of the same idea. So, what do we move on to next? Mantles? I'm talking about mantles and all the things of Halloween.
Mantles is what Halloween's all about, right? So.
Well, masks and trick-or-treating and tricking people and then killing them. Yeah.
Right. To take their stuff.
So how many mantles do you think are out there? We have the Winter Night, Summer Night, Summer Lady Court and everything. Is the Earl King a mantle? Or...
Potentially, because he's always, like, in the explanation Mab gave about him, like, he's to the goblins what I am to the she. It sounds like the Earl King is a mantle which a goblin, like, once the Earl King dies, another goblin ascends to the mantle of Earl King.
Well, yeah, and it wouldn't be, like, a warrior leadership role if you couldn't, you know, murder the previous one and take it up.
Kill him and take his stuffs. Kill him and take his stuffs.
Interesting. What about, like, any of the Greek gods? Like, is Hades a mantle?
I'm I'm going to suggest maybe that anybody of sufficient power probably becomes a mantle at some point, or certainly any of the quote-unquote immortals, that maybe they're not immortal because they can never die, because that's clearly not a thing, but they're immortal because the mantle is immortal and relatively indestructible, or at least, you know, it's very difficult to mutate them, because it seemed like, you know, Mab can take the mantle, and they were freaking out in Summer Night because the Summer Night mantle was missing, and if you could take both of these mantles, that would just give somebody some tremendous amount of power and imbalance the power between the courts, at least. But, I mean, I would imagine any of the Greek, Norse, other gods, but then they also kind of talk about, like, the Oblivion Wars, for example, or, like, some of the African tribe gods, where it's like, sure, they're out there, but nobody really worships them much, so they're just kind of, like, wasting away. So there's some kind of complexity in there. But, I mean, for example, the reason why I say Norse and everybody is because Vaterung very clearly is, like, two, at a minimum, different mantles, and so he's still Odin, but he sort of wears the Kringle thing because that's what gives him his power for the most part. So,
legally speaking, Vaterung and Kringle, the two people that just happen to reside in the same body.
Yeah, there's that, but like Kringle is the evolution of what Odin became, so it's like they're essentially the same person, or I don't know, maybe like twins, like they came from the same egg and then they split off, and now they're two different people, even though they might be genetically the same. So, it's like, sort of. But with the Norse gods, they have a very, like, dictated time of when they die when Ragnarok comes around. I don't think the Greek gods do. So, maybe there's a difference in how the Norse gods and their mantles work.
Maybe. I don't know that Ragnarok happened yet, so I think that's where I lose it.
No, I mean, the Ragnarok hasn't happened yet because that's the big apocalyptic trilogy that we're building up to. That's, yeah. And then Odin's going to die, and then there's a fire, and all sorts of things.
Yeah, but where's Thor and all the ice giants then?
Trapped under Demon Reach, maybe? I don't know where Thor is. Getting drunk. But, I mean, even in the Norse mythology, after Ragnarok, there's some people who survive, but they're not always the same person, except for one dead guy comes back, so that's confusing. But it's like, I don't know.
Actually, on the topic of Greek mythology, could demigods exist in the Dresden Files world? Because demigods are the children of gods and humans. And we already sort of have a precedent for that in the Halflings, which are the kids of the She and humans, so is it possible, you know, that Hades maybe has a couple of, like, Skellington kids running around?
Well, isn't that what Dracula was? Like, the starter of the Black Court, he was the child of Dracul, the creature, and a human, I think? And so it's, like, Dracul is a demon that got stuck in human form and punished that way, I think, is what Jim said. And so there's that. I think that's what Kincaid is, too. He's a hellhound. The same kind of ideas. I would say, assume so. Maybe Hercules is out there somewhere.
Yeah, you said halfling, but it's changelings, right? For the half she, half mortals, and then they call the children of supernatural creatures like scions. I think so. Kincaid's like a scion of some kind, and like you said, Dracula is probably another example. That's the fun thing about the mythology, though, is we only just found out that the Greek gods are maybe still around, so, you know, maybe some of those mantles are the same, maybe they've been changed. It seems like the fairy queens existed the same, or in some similar way, because the statues resemble them so clearly in Skin Game, so maybe some of them transform, some of them are still around, and some have been claimed by somebody else, and it's different now. I don't know.
Look, all I want to see is Zeus's kid running around in the Dresden Files universe with a toga on, throwing lightning bolts at people.
There are some people who throw lightning bolts, so maybe he's a wizard. But kind of on idea of mantles, jumping subject a little bit, is an archangel thing a mantle? Could Uriel die and then pass it off to someone else? I don't know enough about Christian mythology to say.
Well, they have their well, they have their grace, which I guess is could be technically seen as another term for a mantle, except their grace just has a lot more rules stuck to it, maybe. I don't know. It seems like in the Dresden Files universe, there's this whole sort of thing where the more power you have associated with you, the more number of rules you have binding you.
Definitely. So you think if Uriel gave the grace to Michael and then Uriel died, Michael would be stuck as an archangel forever?
I mean, potentially, because we saw Michael do some pretty stellar things with the grace. Or it could be the same topic as Soulfire. Like, the grace didn't make Michael more powerful, it made him more of what he was.
Which is awesome. So, that'd be pretty good. Justin, Chris, you have thoughts?
Yeah, it seems... I like the idea of the grace. That makes more sense to me, that the grace is a kind of mantle where he was able to pass that off. But certainly they were freaked out at the possibility of not knowing what was going to happen if Uriel did die, because they protected him almost more fiercely than anyone else in the house, just because they were concerned that if he's mortal now, you know, potentially the grace would get destroyed, or worse, you know, something would happen to the planet, because, you know, Uriel was there for different solar systems being formed and that sort of thing. But the part of the issue I have is that it seems like the rules of the White God, you know, are basically different. They're very similar in some cases, but Dresden, early on with Michael, always talks about how his prayers have a power about them, but it's not his power. And so he can tell that there's some kind of magic going on, but it's not really exactly the same. And so that it's sort of a gray area in my mind, you know, on how that exactly works, if they go by the same rules or not.
I think the best analogy for that was in... I think the best analogy for that was in the short story Warrior, when the priest and Michael are fighting, and then Dresden's going, well, they're using words. I know what those words mean, but I have no idea what they're talking about. Because remember, Dresden Files is also told from Harry's perspective, so maybe these are just things that Harry just doesn't understand in the slightest.
Yeah, that's probably very true. I don't know that I buy that the grace is the same as a mantle. I don't think it can be transferred like that, just because, like we said, the rules for the White God work a little differently. And as far as like the angels themselves being mantles, I believe they're like immortal beings that have been around since the creation of the universe. I'm not exactly sure that would work in the same sense as like your winter nights or your what have you.
Also, I remembered a line from Skin Game when they're talking about Michael having the grace. When they get to the conclusion, if Michael does a wrong thing, Uriel says that he would fall. Not Michael, that Uriel would become a fallen angel. So it seems a little bit more tied to Uriel than just a mantle.
Well, technically, I believe it'd be Uriel's grace which would fall, not Uriel himself, because we see Uriel kill a man, and that doesn't seem to affect him.
He was defending the homestead, though, and besides, he's been, you know, fighting wars since your solar system was formed. What, maybe that was the quote I was thinking of, but, you know, when he grabs the little knife, he's like, look, I'm not helpless, like, I'm just mortal.
But would Uriel become fallen, or would Michael become fallen?
Uriel would be a kick-ass angel in a coin.
Yeah. Well, don't they, they sort of refer to Uriel as, like, God's wet work guy, right? Like, he's not necessarily, you know, a float-on-a-cloud cherub-type person. Like, he's in the shit doing stuff. So, yeah, like what was the quote? He's been fighting wars, you know, forever. I don't necessarily think just the act of killing would necessarily make him fall. I think, like, a truly, like, evil deed might need... to happen.
And to answer your question more directly, I think the reason why Uriel would fall isn't necessarily, you know, because Michael... So it's because Michael used his grace, but not because... It has more to do with the fact that Uriel was like, here you go, little toddler. Here's a loaded gun. Why don't you go use it for good, but don't rob any banks while you're out there? And so they would, you know, they would hold Uriel responsible for having armed said toddler, but not necessarily, I don't know. It's getting confusing now. But anyways, the point is, because he gave him such a powerful weapon, that's why Uriel is now responsible for anything that Michael does. You know, and that's why Uriel would fall, essentially. I think that's how it works in my brain.
Sounds good to me. So, is there anything else about mantles we should talk about? Maybe how to get rid of a mantle? Like, how can Harry get rid of the Winter Night mantle? I don't think he should, but how could he?
We've already seen him do it in terms of fuck Winter's law.
It's true. Forgot about that.
Although when he did it, his back did re-break.
Yeah, it seems like if he needed to at least, you know, suppress the mantle, he could just get some steel and make that happen. But there was this one guy who escaped being a knight, and that's sort of hinted at in Cold Days to give you the hope that he's going to get out of it. So I imagine, you know, in the arc of the story that I've got in my mind, I imagine he is going to escape the mantle at some point. I'm just not sure how, and I'm cool watching it. You know, I don't think it's going to get destroyed or any of that nonsense, because it kind of needs to be around, but maybe it will fall to somebody, you know, somebody similar. I think Leah even hints at it being Thomas, right, as Mab's backup. So they hint at that in Cold Days or something like that.
I think Mab brought up Thomas at the end of Small Favor, and then there was also that interesting thing of Harry says that he's not human, he's not mortal, and Mab says he's in love, and that's mortal enough for me.
Still on the topic of Halloween here, I had to unmute myself like 3 times there by accident. When he went to give Marvra the book of the Word of Kemlar, he was talking about how he knows how to use necromancy against the Black Court. Now, I think I'm probably just a complete dum-dum here, but can anyone explain that to me? Because I never got that in the book, even when I listened to it as an audiobook for the first time.
So, with Harry using black magic against the Black Court, is that what you're saying?
When he said to Marvra, I know how necromancy can be used against the Black Court. Is it just because they're dead and he can control them?
I thought it had to do with the Dark Hollow and just kind of consuming life forces and black magic and everything. I just assumed it was a byproduct of the Dark Hollow. But yeah, maybe there was something else going on there.
I mean, I kind of took it that Marvra is an animated corpse, and with necromancy she can, or Harry could, manipulate her body even though she wouldn't want him to. And so kind of like, because she's basically a zombie and he can do zombie things, that was it, versus the Dark Hollow just taking life force.
Yeah, I took it more as just a general threat. Like, I know this new magic that I can specifically target you with, so back the fuck off.
Yeah, that was fun. And I can't wait to see Marvra again. She's one of the characters I really want to come back, because I know it's going to be interesting. Hopefully peace talks.
Right. Yay, next book, where pretty much all the loose ends seem like they're going to come home to roost, but we'll find out for sure.
It's going to be explosive.
I swear to God, when Kincaid and Dresden meet, I'd better get some goddamn good snarky dialogue about how he fucked up killing Dresden.
I can't wait personally for...
make fun of Kincaid for botching his execution, too.
Next, fucking Christ. Next time, don't shoot me into a fucking lake, man.
Yeah, I personally can't wait for Ebenezer and Thomas have to be in the same room together. Yeah, because all the things that happen, they're talking about in Turncoat, it's like Harry's going to put his foot down in some way, and there's going to be some bruises, probably.
I think what I'm also looking forward to is I saw a Reddit post where it was like, you know, Peace Talks Dresden's going to walk into the White Council room wearing a bathrobe with GED scrawled onto his stole, with a little red wagon pulling along the holy artifacts of the Christian church, just saying, yo, what's up? That's something, God, if that happens, just best book in the series, easily, without it, just shadow of a doubt, easy.
Did you get a chance to read the one that was posted a couple months ago where it was like, shut up, Merlin, you don't have the talkie stick. So I think that one is my favorite. So.
Yes, you don't have the Lance of Longulus. Shut up. Oh God, there's so much he can do with Peace Talks that would just make it probably one of the best books in the series if you tried.
Yeah. But even none of this is talking about, like, the first line that we now know of, as well as he was writing Murphy's funeral. So how is all of this going to play out? I can't wait. I read Aeronauts Windlass, and now I need more. God damn it.
Yeah. Aeronauts Windlass was actually really good. I was a little bit surprised at how much I enjoyed it. But Dresden Files things, not Aeronauts Windlass, yes. Because... damn.
Maybe we should bring just a Jim Butcher podcast.
Maybe. I don't know. First line with Justine being pregnant, I was a little bit surprised. I'm like, oh, okay then. Have fun with being a dad, Thomas.
Yeah, and thinking about babies, Margaret had a tendency to give birth on holidays. Like, Thomas is born on Valentine's Day, and then she gives birth on Halloween. It's just, how can that have been planned?
I think that's Jim Butcher just fucking with us as usual.
Well, she seemed to have unlocked the whole Starborn thing at some point, so she must have figured out that dates have meaning. Maybe Thomas was a fluke, but Dresden was definitely planned.
I guess so. I mean, we know that he's planned in some way, but Thomas being born on Valentine's Day is just, really? But is there anything else that we should talk about? Chris, do you have any ideas?
No, I think we pretty much nailed it.
Okay. So that apparently is the Halloween episode. We're at just about an hour, maybe a little bit under, but can't think of anything else we're talking about. Don't want to bloat it up. So you can contact us on Twitter and then email and Reddit and everything else. I'm tired of that part. So that's it. Bye, guys.